Good morning, everybody. It's October 8th, 2019, and I'm calling to order the meeting with Story County Board of Supervisors. And if you would like to, please join us as we say the Pledge of Allegiance. Supervisor Hedden is joining us by telephone today. I would entertain a motion to adopt our agenda.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda is adopted. Now we will go to public comment number one. And this comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody in the public who would like to make a comment at this time? Seeing nobody moves the microphone, I'll close public comment number one. We have no agency reports. We'll go on to consideration of minutes, September 24th and October 1st minutes are in our packet. Is there a motion to approve those?
I would move that we approve them as submitted. I did make note of one Scribner change that needs to be changed.
Okay. Motion by Olson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Hedden. Okay. Any discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are approved. Next is consideration of personnel actions as listed. I would entertain a motion.
I would move that we approve them as submitted.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, moved and seconded. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Personnel actions are approved. Next, we move on to consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve consent agenda?
I would move that we approve consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. The consent agenda is approved as listed. Then we go on to public hearing items. We have none. On to agenda item 10. Additional items, we have Jerry Moore here. Hi, Jerry. Planning and Development Department. To talk about us, to our decommissioning the agreement and guaranteeing support of a bond.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to talk about the wind energy conversion system located in the northeast part of Story County in Warren, Lincoln, and Sherman, townships. The project was actually approved by the Board of Adjustment in 2007, and there were many requirements to make a submittal. One of those requirements was that the applicant, which was Florida Power and Light, it's currently NextEra Energy, they had a name change. They're required to provide financial assurance up to 130% to cover decommissioning of the units in the event that the systems were not in operation over a year's time. And so the document that was provided and approved by the county and by the board was a decommissioning agreement guarantee or an assurance letter. When the applicants submitted for their conversion project this year, June 19, to the Board of Adjustment, planning staff requested the applicants to update that assurance document to reflect the current project. That information was reviewed by the county attorney's office, and after talking to planning staff about it, it was determined that a better tool or mechanism would be to request the applicants to submit a surety bond, which they gladly did. So they provided a surety bond in the amount of $11,111,132. The previous assurance letter was for $4 million, and again, that was back in 2007. So the surety bond is for over $11 million, and it's for a 30-year period of time. So we thought it was helpful to come and try to explain the situation. So you're actually being requested to terminate the decommissioning agreement guarantee, which is that assurance letter, which it was primarily just a promise that they would have $4 million available to cover a situation where that system, the 100 units, were not operational for a period of time. And so you're being requested to terminate, support termination of that assurance letter, and support the surety decommissioning bond. We also have a performance bond, which is a separate item that Darren worked on with the applicants, NextEra Energy, to cover any issues that we might have with the road, and that's valued at $750,000. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
So, Jerry, this is Lisa. So, just for clarification, so from reading all the documents that were presented, were you want us to vote to on the decommission, but then also that there is a new guarantee in line? Is that correct? I heard you say that there is an agreement. I just want to make sure there is there a written agreement. I was kind of unclear on that.
Right. The current document that has standing is this decommissioning agreement guarantee, which we call the assurance letter. And it's going to be replaced, if the board supports it, with this surety decommissioning bond to cover, you know, in the event that this these systems are not operational for a year's period of time, that they would have this money available to take care of decommissioning, removing the rotors, the nacelle, the towers, and then I think it goes like 4 feet below grade. And it was determined that the over $11 million would be an adequate enough amount of money to cover removal of the 100 units.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
You mentioned in your staff memo that the previous agreement was not notarized. Does that mean you would like to get this one? I should get this one notarized.
That was something that the county attorney's office mentioned. So
okay, I'll work with you on that. On that then. Any other questions?
I have no questions. Just a comment that sometimes as time moves on, things happen that can be to I think the county and the citizens' benefit. And in this particular case, through no deliberate, you know, intention of anyone, but we're in a situation now where we're able to increase the amount of kind of that guarantee by $7 million, and I think that's a benefit. And thank you to the staff and everyone for working on this.
Yeah, yeah, and they actually had an engineer determine like all the there was a breakdown of all the different the various components involved, and it. It was quite extensive, but the 130%—that's what the $11 million represents.
Did they happen to say during any of these conversations what they do with the materials that are left? That's something I've read about lately. That one of the downsides of wind energy seems to be that the blades are getting longer. They're replacing them. They have their fiberglass. What are they doing to responsibly? I mean, it's their problem. It's not ours. I was just curious because I've heard this could be a real downside because those get changed off.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that they can, I mean, if they're in decent condition, they can be reused for other projects. I've heard the applicants talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, with just like any other material, you know, and I don't know this for sure, but there's usually markets to recycle or repurpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the material is like fiberglass type material that could be broken down and reused.
Okay.
But they did tell us that oftentimes they find other owners that are interested in acquiring them and using them for different projects.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, any other questions? Okay, if not, I would entertain a motion to terminate the decommissioning agreement previously and to approve the surety decommissioning bond. Would that do it, Jerry?
Correct.
I so move as stated.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
None.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. We'll get those okay. signed and notarized then.
Thank you
for all your work on
this.
Okay. Next, we have Alyssa Wignall regarding the NeoGo perform description.
Good morning. We are currently going to transition over to an electronic system for our evaluations, employee evaluations. In the budget for this fiscal year, we had budgeted for the perform system. It goes along with our applicant tracking system that we changed to back in 2012. The reason I have it as a discussion item today, since we placed it in the budget last year for the FY20 budget, we have had discussions with the sheriff's office and they will be utilizing the software. The cost of the software is based on the number of employees, so that did significantly increase our cost, or that significantly increased the number of employees covered. So originally we had budgeted $13,100, which is the actual cost is about $2,000 more. So I wanted to bring it to the board for formal approval. This was placed in the IT budget for this current fiscal year.
Okay. If I could then ask and clarify, we
sure.
budgeted $13,000
yep.
in the IT budget,
yes.
correct? But the subscription fee of $11,000 and then that service fee of the $4,000 brings us up to the $15,000, which is where you get that $2,000 difference. So we're really only increasing $2,000 on budgeted.
And okay, that's because the sheriff's office is yeah. now going to participate.
Yes, they are. They had a demo of it at their last retreat and are interested in utilizing the software. So
that's my only question.
Okay.
Supervisor Hedens, do you have any questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay. If there's, I have no further questions either, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll move that we approve the additional expenditure of approximately $2,000 to make certain that the Sheriff's Department can also participate in the NeoGov using the system.
I will second that motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We've approved.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Department Reports Engineer, Darren Moon.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, I will start out on the maintenance side of things. Gravel roads in most locations have returned to normal condition, thankfully. After the damaging spring thaw that we had, picture that. Hopefully, that's a thing in the past. We don't get it again this next spring, but you never know. Mother Nature, nothing's happened. We continue to haul rock to some of the locations until we were to freeze. We about get to the point where roads are starting to freeze. We're talking freeze tomorrow. We don't want to put on too late because if we can't work it into the road, the plows will knock it off the road sooner. So probably cease hauling rock fairly soon. The mostly dry summer allowed us to get quite a bit of maintenance work done on culverts and tile repairs, ditch cleanouts and bridge back wall washouts. A few pictures. This is one major tile repair. So a large drop structure that goes under the road through a box culvert. Had washed out. Picture the finished repair. We replaced it about an 8 to 10 foot drop. Replaced the drop structure. Looking down inside, you can see there's tile intake. Cut out to go through the box culvert through the road and we had the fourth floor. The old floor, the old one that popped out and blocked the culvert so the water couldn't get out. So kind of made it more of an emergency repair. These bridge back wall washouts, we've had another 3 or 4 of these with flooding events. They tend to pop up. The old wood bridges don't have floors, so it's scoured deeper and deeper throughout the years and then undercut the back wall and create a hole on the back side of the back wall. So the box covers are putting in out of the floor in them, so it kind of prevents it. So another state can measure the box covers we're putting in. We continue to mow shoulders on our 925 miles of roadway. Hope to get one more in before the snow season. To prevent drifting, it doesn't take much brush on the side of the road to create a drift and then get pounded. We did recently, about a month ago, get our new tractor and mower. The new mower style, we used to have one similar to this about 5 years ago, but it got rear-ended in an accident and pulled it out. So we were trying some other mowers. We had three with this type, but we wanted to get at least one of these back in our fleet, and you guys really like it so far. Rock hauling, you've seen this map. This is the contract haul, the blue lines, what the contract haul for Martin Marietta. Reason I'm pointing out again, our crews hauled a bunch down here with their own truck. And then we had about 10,000 tons of gravel from the Boone County pit, which is about right here, left over. So our guys hauled it to this area. That may be the last gravel. It's kind of a natural product. It's mostly sand. We get a lot of places when it goes down. If it's not a good road building product, it's limestone. We have two sources, the Boone pit here and the Marshall pit in Marshall County. We don't have one in Story County. Marshall pit is completely used up. Boone County's probably got more material, but it isn't the best quality. So I think we're done with gravel until another source opens up. So from now on, we're going to be all strictly limestone.
Is there a significant difference in the cost?
It's about twice as much for limestone.
Okay.
Moving on to the construction side of things, we have 7 projects this year for construction. They're almost all completed. The Palestine box that it started, it's more or less completed now. It just needs rock on it. You can dry out from that last rain until we get rock on the top, and then that'll be open. Only one left is this Palestine 13, and that has will probably start today. The road will be closed. So everything else is done. Just a few pictures. This is the Sherman 33, the old wood bridge type. Tear the bridge out, bring in a new precast culvert, and that's the finished product. This is Indy Creek 5, another small wood bridge, load post that you can see the sign right here. This one has some tile issues. We had to relocate around the box, walk the tile out of the county. Finished product. One more list on Sand Hill Trail. Every big storm event would wash out behind this back wall, and we'd have to close this one. So I'm glad we finally got this one in place. Picture of it going in. Finished product. Already getting some grass growing. It only took a couple days. We had so much rain the past month or so. It'd take longer to grow the grass. E63 overlay, this was mostly just a straight overlay project. We did have some bad spots that we had to tear out ahead of time and patch. That's what this is here, but the rest of it was a straight overlay. This is really the only highway we have in the county that has curves in it, and has a lot of them, so it makes it challenging with the overlay a little bit more. Went good. The only thing left, they don't have the painted edge line on yet, and that's supposed to come in on Thursday. Construction project design. We're working on a few of the bonding projects. The first one's the 13th Street paving. That's adding 2 more miles out to the, from the C Bains and Holmes area across. We're going to start purchasing it right away real soon. We've got the plans designed. This does go into Nevada about a half a mile, and because it's bonding money, we are able to spend money within the city limits. But we do not have an agreement yet, since we're working in the city. We need to get that done. Every step of the way that they're going through the city manager change, so it might be a little bit of a delay getting that done, but we're working on that. The City of Huxley one, 560th, they are designing that one. They hired a consultant. We do have an agreement in place because they will be working in the county as well. We do need to purchase the right of way for the county portion, though, so as soon as their engineer gets that right away designated, we'll be able to start purchasing that with bond money. We did move up the bond money, actually bonding a little bit, so we have money available for this right away purchasing. City of Huxley thinks they might be ready for construction next year. That would mean winter letting things are going to fall in place pretty quickly. A lot of other things working on design-wise, 530th Avenue, that's the other bonding paving project, south of 8th University Avenue. Avery Grove Overlay, 535th, bike trail paving, and then seven other bridges and culverts for next year. Upcoming hearings, do have a couple of hearings come up I want to make you aware of, because the first you see of it is when I put an item on the agenda to set hearing date, so just to make you aware of what those are. They're pretty non-controversial, so there will be a lot of information on them. The first two are paving points, 560 at the Huxley Project. The DOT has some requirements. When you pave a gravel road, it has to meet certain point requirements. If it doesn't, you can still pave it, but you have to hold a public hearing. I don't expect any comment on these. The Huxley one will get a lot of comments. People want to update you. And the other one's just that short stretch of 535 for the pipe. Public controversy on that one. The second one, the road vacation hearing. We have a lot of old town roads in Bernal and Iowa Center. We had some property changes that changed hands, and when they requested a light road vacated, we weren't happy to get out of our system so we can do anything anymore. So this sort of stretch of road in Iowa Center, and all landowners are abutting the property. I have them agreed to the upfront, so when it comes to the hearing points, it's really non-controversial.
So, Darren, who does do that request? One of the property owners? Is that what it is?
They bring it to me.
Okay.
I pretty much tell them what's the stuff I get from that I might steal and agree to it. If not, I can still bring it to the board, but I like to know that we're getting into anything. It's difficult to vacate a road when there's even one property that doesn't want to vacate. Mm-hmm. In this case there's only two members, so maybe it's one.
Okay. All right, thank you. Since Iowa Center is unincorporated, I mean it's really
so they just so they're on either side, so they'll just split it, right?
Split the difference.
Each gets half the road as their property. Okay.
Federal bridge bundling grant. The good news, we finally got an answer from the federal government. We did get a grant for the statewide bridge bundling. Let's see. The state as a whole got $33 million. Fortunately, we had a project ready to go, so we had one of our bridges selected. We're going to get about $330,000 of that to go towards this bridge on E18 right here. Original request was for 75%, but they bumped it down to 55%, but we'll take it. They had $225 million available nationwide, and like I said, Iowa got $33 million. The second part of that is because of bundling, we're going to have to work with Franklin County. That's the county we're bundled with. So we're going to have to come up with an agreement. One county has to take the lead and let both projects. That's something both counties have never done before, so I have to run that through Ethan. And the good thing is they're both on farm market roads. There will be no local money involved, so it'll all funnel through our farm market accounts. That'll help make it much easier. If there's local money being spent, so then you're essentially taking responsibility for another county, which is more complicated. The DOT is working on some draft agreements for the county to use for that purpose for the sharing. When those come out, I'll let you know.
Darren, you have noted here that we need to determine which county will take the lead. Do you have a preference? Do you want to take the lead on it?
I'm just kind of assuming some sort of larger county, Franklin. Look at us to take the lead in this, but I assume that we haven't heard about it. Historic bridge on Kimmerer Road. This has come up. One, we've had some severe erosion take place, and we've had a couple landowners call in to comment to ask what's going to take place there. Might have been barely cut off the screen. The bridge is right here. Give an idea where it is. City of Ames, Kenmerrill Road comes off of Highway 69 right here. How out to this Gum River crossing. The bridge is historic. This is kind of a sheet from the historic register sheet. It was built in 1876, actually down by Cambridge. And in 1916, it was moved up to the current location it is right now. It cost $6,000 in today's money. Just a little background there. A few more pictures. This is looking at the end of the Kenmare Road pavement. It's been gated for quite some time, even though we believe it's still, the historic report says it was, the road was vacated, but we find no evidence of that. We're going to look into that more. You can't really gate a road unless it's vacated, but this landowner has never locked it, so it's a lot of public use to walk their dogs. Bridge closed sign. The first, I think, quarter mile or so is actually City of Ames, and then we level beat ours, so there's a sign you can't see on there that says level beat me. Hit the county portion. It's just a mud road at that point. When you get way back to the bridge, we recently added these delineators across here. We had some signs further back, and they, you'll see why they disappeared. So we added this for safety reasons. Nobody can drive through with that one. Been vandalized already. Fairly new sign. Different angle you can see. It's completely scoured out the set. About 15-foot drop straight down, so people walk back there. It's a bit of a safety concern. The bridge is to the point where we don't really want people walking on it anymore anyway, so I don't see a real need to rebuild all this and put a lot of money into it to get access again. Show you more pictures. Looking back across the other sites, scouring, I'll show you some aerial photos that show how that's growing, so eventually that abutment is going to get washed out as well. The two-span bridge, this is really the historic part. This was added on when they moved this portion in here. And then this side used to be covered in these tall trees, and they're all getting knocked down, and they're gone along this side, and they're falling down the stream. Fortunately, the downstream, we had this happen upstream, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. We had to come in and hire somebody to remove because they were caught up on the bridge. Those are all downstream, so that's not causing us an issue. The deck itself, we get kids back here partying. You see that they start fires and they burn part of the bridge. The deck is really thin now. At the point, you don't really want to walk on it. It's dropped some here. There's a support that fell out. Just get to the point we don't really want people on it anymore. Looking the other way again, I'll show you there a photo of that scour. In 2003, what it looked like. Fairly straight coming into the bridge here. And I wanted to point out too, that there was some research this landowner did with, I think, Iowa State to try to stabilize this bank. I think a lot of willow trees and stuff were stuck in the bank, maybe riprap to try to protect that. But as you can see over time, that didn't even work. So in 2008, started to scour a little bit more. And their project's about half gone when they tried to stabilize. 2013, really started to scour over here. I want to point out, see all the trees here. Those are huge cottonwoods. Mm-hmm. And then in 2019, their project's completely scoured and gone. And it's almost made it up to and it will just continue. The trees are all gone here. They've all collapsed and went downstream. There's a stream that comes down this way and meets that. That's where that hole was, where it doesn't meet. It just turns and scours it out. Zooming in on that, you can see that a little better. But there is some gray area when a bridge becomes historic, what our responsibilities are. Do we have to provide public access to it, just up to the bridge, or do we have to allow them on it, or do we have to protect the bridge at all, or can we allow this scour to continue? It's really ramped up over the past couple of years, especially on this one. Those are questions that are unanswered. I've reached out to DOP in the past year, and I'm not getting much from them. The state historic site generally doesn't answer a lot of those questions either. They make it historic, and kind of that's what we do. Some of the calls I've gotten are, what are you guys going to do? And kind of want to bring it to the board now, just make you aware of it and think about it. But for now, we're trying to make it safe, and hopefully we'll get some legal guidance somewhere on what part of the responsibility are. It would be very costly to try to stop this erosion, even this erosion here, because you're looking at $10,000 to try to protect it. It's fairly sturdy, it's the concrete back wall, but I think the bridge will stay up there, even if it scours behind them for quite some time. Boone County had a historic one get taken down into the river, and at that point they were required to be moved from the river. It happened. This plan is making me aware of it. I don't know how to answer people over it to be protected. It is a neat structure if people go back and look at it. It's time we keep them off the bridge at this point, but whether we vacate the road, if we vacate the road, they're not going to have access. At this point, this may be what's going on. We're going to try to sign as best we can to make it safe. We'll talk about it again in the future, and hopefully we'll have more information from the DOTs.
When did you say it was moved?
1916.
16? No. So probably nobody knows then if anybody brought up if it was historic then. Probably not. It's really interesting.
Was made historic in, I think it was 1990.
Okay, but around then.
Been on the historic register all that
long. Okay. Before we move on, to let everyone know that I've been contacted by a resident interested in some historic preservation who's inquired about the historic bridges, that if we do remove one or we're going to look at doing major repairs to keep them historic, would the county be interested in developing a project where we would take the bridge and put it into one of the parks, either in a city park or a county park? My response is I would talk to Darren and talk to Mike Cox about this. The person had proposed it going on the CIP plan. Obviously, I explained the process and that we were not anywhere near or anything like that. But so I will try and set up a meeting with Darren and Mike just to talk about what would be the pros and cons of something like that. So.
I think about 20 years ago, it was kind of discussed on about the moving this band, but it's such a thin truss. Sometimes they pick these up with helicopters. Because it's so thin, it would collapse on itself, so you'd have to put so much of their investment from consulting to you on how much grazing it would take to do that. You have to talk to them. And the other span's got a concrete that kind of thing. Moving it, would you don't have to take it completely.
Sure. Well, we can talk about it, and then I can get back to the resident. Yeah.
Hickory Grove, lake pipes. We discussed how we fixed the pipes under Hickory Grove Lake. We had two of these pipes that were scoured underneath, and we fixed them with grout. I just want to point out the material that they were hauling out from the lake project, you can see how filthy and mucky this is. So they put it in trucks, and they hauled it down the highway. They couldn't keep that stuff from spilling out through the truck. And this is the pavement. You can't see the edge line. It's such a mess. But we kept that closed while they were hauling just for public safety reasons. And it was really dusty at times. But they also started breaking up the pavement as they hauled on it. So they paid to come in and patch, I think, three spots. They were fixed a little. They patched. And then finally, in September, they were pretty much done hauling, so we were able to get this road back open to the public. And we're coming to this next year with an overlay all the way around the road, so to touch all this stuff up. And then after the lake project, outchap update. We started work on the concrete slab for the Saul Bennett Kelly shed this week. We hope to have that food building structure up before winter. So I've been called for a shed temporarily closed until the wall repairs are made, and we're still waiting on a few repair quotes and contracts from that. And the Ames shed is officially turned over to facilities management. Thanks, Jordan, for working on that. They will take over that building. We have no further that serving blade replacements. It's hard to see there, but you see the trucks lined up, either blades and trucks. So that's in full swing, replacing all the blades on 100 turbines. It's gone well, mainly because they didn't do this in the spring when the roads were bad. They do this stuff in the summer and fall. The roads aren't that big of an issue. They're helping us maintain them. There was one stretch where the cranes that they put turbines up are really large and wide, so they really can't take those down the gravel roads. They have to take them through the farm field, and there was a stretch they couldn't get permission from the farmers, and it was only like 300 feet they had to go, so they allowed them to use the gravel roads, and they had to widen down some. That went wrong, but really the only thing that's come up on it so far had the issue, like say hundreds of hauling permits for the oversized loads. It's all going well. The pipeline documentation update, all inspection documents were turned over to us last week, and we were trained by ISG on the database they made of all the documents from inspection. So at this point, any new issues that come up with the farm, field, the tile, need to come to our office instead of ISG, and we will go to the pipeline to fix them and turn in their pipeline issues. Moving on to the radios, we get some new pricing information on the radios, and it sounds like we may need to place an order soon. Dina has been doing a great job keeping me updated the best she can, but there's been some delays in radios, and we got to get everything in place by next July 1st, or prior to that, so we can get the transition before July 1st. If we decide to go with the new radios, which we are leading in that direction. We should be able to finance them if we do go the direction, but we're talking about $150,000 just for our department, just for the radios, and then there's going to be an annual fee on top of that for radio. We're not sure what that's going to be yet, so we're going to close it. We have, about $30,000 budget for our annual maintenance. We do every year for our radio lease. Whether that's going to be enough to cover the upgraded radios or not, we don't really know at this time. And at some point, I need to get board approval on whether to approve our policy. So I don't have any official action for the radio first. So that's hopefully that'll all come shortly.
I anticipate, if I'm understanding this correctly, that. Our discussion, for me at least, about what you're going to do is going to be somewhat dependent about where we are totally on story comes.
That's right. Dina's finalizing numbers right now.
Okay,
for
great.
Radios for the county to see how that fits in. Okay. And she had that almost done and then had to take some time off.
Sure.
And she's getting back to that. But
okay.
She's been talking with Sharon, with Mike, and I think with Joby some also.
Okay.
And as well as her staff there, so she's close to being done.
Great. Okay, thank you.
GPS tracking of equipment, this is just kind of an FYI item. We currently track all 10 of our motor graders, and this is what the screen looks like. We can see where they all are all at all times, and we have only 4 of our dump trucks on this at this time. Why I'm bringing this up is the DOT is requesting we allow them to host our data on their website. To be honest, I'm not a big fan of hosting our motor vehicle information. That can get kind of personal with people, and if there's not a lot of benefit to showing them to people. In the winter, with plows and stuff, I see a benefit to that. But we don't have all of our trucks equipped with GPS, so if we don't have them all, which would be benefit to the public, we can't see them at all. I think it's kind of a one of our, they want us to go into the test counties. I think Winneshiek is the other one they've approached. They, I think, do have it on their trucks, so they might post their trucks. But at this point, I've been telling the DOT, I'm really not comfortable putting a board grader I wanted to get the board thought on if they thought otherwise. There was a big benefit to it. Maybe that probably seemed more harm to it.
What would the benefit be to the public?
Right.
Mostly in the winter, they can see if we have all the motor graders on there, they can see where they've been, At this point, we realize they call our office and we can quickly look it up and say, hey, it might be here. And just tell them about that. We encourage them to call us for that purpose. But in the summer, definitely not. They're just out waiting. And we've had some instances where people are trying to find them and they're upset.
What is the DOT's rationale in asking? Have they given a rationale?
Well, they have the traffic files system for the DOT right now. They have an iPhone sitting in front of all their files, so you can track those. They just kind of want to bring in the county system. I don't know why they're pushing it.
Yeah, if you look at the DOT, their site, it really is quite interesting to see where all their graders and everything are all at.
They don't have much of a grader, so they're mainly showing their truck files in the winter and night.
Right, well, yeah, that's what I meant, sorry.
We do give benefit to that. We just don't have them on equipment right now. That's quite a few more. So if we ever get to that point, I don't have any issues with the truck files.
It wouldn't show, like, the route where that plow is going, though. It would just show where it is.
Correct.
So people may still have to call in and say, are they going left or right after that section?
Yeah.
Are they coming towards me or are they headed the other way?
And that can create more issues. We'll get people calling. Why did they turn that way when they
were
closed?
Yeah.
They're already in this report.
Yeah. So it's limited. It's some use, but to really give information to somebody about when will the plow go by my house. Is it headed that way? Not necessarily.
Internally, we can track, we can pull up a map that shows where they've all been immediately. And that's really nice, but they can't get that externally. They'll just be able to see where they are. And that's when the people call in, we can see they've made it back and forth all the way down to here and say, well, they're probably heading this direction, so we can get a little more additional information.
But for the dump trucks, I mean, looking at the request outside of the plowing season, is there a separate benefit? I mean, because it's not usually a situation where looking at, am I going to be able to get out to get to work like we do? We know all the reasons we want to know where snow plows or the public would want to know. I'm not clear about why the public would normally care where the dump trucks are. Given the fact that all you do is go around where they have dumped it, I mean, you know, we're not closing roads for that. There's not usually a delay.
I think the biggest benefit to the DOT one, people that actually have a camera there, so you can actually see what the driver's seeing. We're not going to have any camera. So essentially, you're seeing what the truck file is.
Is there a way you could just do this for the winter plowing? If there's some benefit, but you said all your plows don't have cameras.
No, we don't have them all. I don't really see the benefit, but I wouldn't be opposed to trying truck plows. We only have four right now. People might think that's all we have out there, though, so I don't want that to be the impression. We have 13 truck routes. So. At this point, that's been my response to them. I'm hesitant to get that going now. If we had all our trucks online, probably go for it. Casey had asked about it. I want to make you aware of it.
Okay. Please also pass on to them if they follow up on this conversation. It's just, could we get more concrete information from you about why you feel this would be of benefit and how you feel, DOT, about maybe mitigating some of the downside, like people possibly tracking employees or having expectations or them going out to try and track down an operator themselves and end up in a confrontation. Thanks.
West 190th and Grant Street intersection, a letter was sent to the city of Ames requesting they look at the possible intersection improvements to address the morning peak traffic issues. Haven't heard a response from that yet, but would assume they'll take that up soon. A couple of drainage district issues. DD20, Pernal tile and tree. Finally got that removed. There's a large tree right here. The green line is the district tile that runs through Pernal, and this large tree root continues to block that, which affects about the entire town. new homeowner moved in that was okay with removing the tree. So we had a contractor come in. It was right over the house and power lines, so it was a difficult removal. But finally got that removed. So we were talking about putting a solid tile through here to prevent the tree root issues. But the tree's gone. I think we'll continue on without that replacement. We still do want to do the John Hunter list here. There's a tile he wants to put in across the road to drain this low area. We're still working on that. Actually, we're doing some things this week to explore that a little bit more. But he called, he noticed the tree was up, and he was very happy with that. He started seeing the tile working fine. But, you know, nothing really high priority. He's done.
So he knows the plan for next year. Okay, great.
Darren, one question back on the GPS tracking. You're right, I was thinking of these snowplows that the DOT does have online. So I know that they're requesting that you open that up for the graders and stuff to the public. Do they have a timeline that you're wanting that by, or is that just a current request that they have?
It's probably been going on since last winter, I told them I wasn't comfortable with it right now, but they keep contacting me. They kind of wanted me to take the course with your team, so that's kind of why I've done it. But it's been kind of ongoing request.
Okay.
The other drainage district issue is the DD5. You know about the West Main pile that's going in. I've had some other people calling about the maintenance on the south end of the open ditch, and that's something that does need to be repaired. We're going to do a couple of quick things in-house. There's some dirt, a berm that's washed out. We can do something quickly, but there's some letdown structures, like 5 or 6 of those that are being repaired, and that's something that's probably going to do in-house, but it needs to be done as part of the district-wide project. So we talked to Ken about it a little bit, but probably want to get this West Main thing taken care of first, and then soon after we're going to have to bring up the maintenance side for the rest of it.
Darren, I anticipate then at the, when we go into the public discussion on the 23rd, I believe it is, right? Okay, that we're going to get questions about that. The 26th? Okay, thanks. I've got stuff running across my calendar that week because I just know I'm not home much. Okay, so I think we're going to get into that discussion. Is it possible to talk to Kent about having him be able to give some information about a possible timeline just from his viewpoint to look at the main ditch, all right?
Yeah, the plan is pretty much made up already. We're going to move forward with that part of the project.
Right. Okay. I think that would make people happy that they have at least that information, and it will help the Board of Trustees. So.
Sure. It's the 29th public hearing.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks.
Two last items that popped up after the report to make you aware of. One was the DOT public hearing for the 580 interchange on Highway 30. This is the interchange layout. The hearing they're going to hold is there's a public information meeting. It's October 24th at the Crossroads Baptist Church from 5 to 6:30, and that's right here at Baptist Church. To get public comment. They're also drafting an agreement for the county to address some of the issues. There's going to be a lot of new roads created here. I highlighted in blue the new roads that we're going to be county maintenance in the future that we don't currently have now. So we'll have this entire local connection road and the new Sand Hill Road connection over the interchange. This is just offset, so we are currently maintaining this, and then just be offset, so that would be really a new addition to the scope of the bridge. But there'll be a lot of local road connections. The DOT is going to ask that we maintain from here on out. There may be some negotiation involved, and this one goes back to the DOT maintenance facilities, so they're going to see there a lot more than us. There may be some negotiation on that one. The other items, letters is right here. When this does happen, they're going to close this, so that's going to be a little bit controversial for them. But that's their solution, is to bring this local connector road up. There's traffic on 30 C that they're not going to be able to get to. It. back way. Their solution depends on what we're going to have to maintain that road. And they, the draft agreement does not address who pays for these either. Up to this point, I've only heard the DOT paying for them, but maybe they want to negotiate that too, but just make it aware. This is still three to 4 years out before construction begins, so we've got time to start the draft agreement.
Could you send that slide?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is all on the G drive too, or the S drive, under engineer, this whole program of work.
Okay.
When they have this info session on the 24th, Darren, is it possible for you to have just rough figures based on today's cost about what we will be picking up when it comes to maintenance of the of now those sections?
I'll see what I can find out. I guess maybe they're not going to say we're going to negotiate
Okay, I'm just looking at it from our standpoint. You know, if we're using our normal road maintenance programs and protocol, this is going to add a cost to us. I think for me as a supervisor, just as a talking point to staff so that hopefully they will pass it on, to error factor in. But this has been a discussion that's been going back and forth for several years, right? And now that it's back up here. I'd like to have
just staff. Doing maintenance for the public and right. So they can start it right away first thing across. They're going to have to take a house right here and put this connection in.
On
store.
Okay.
So that's not all current roadbed, that's new roadbed.
Right. Well, 580, yes.
Yes, yeah. These local connections are all brand new.
All brand new, so who constructs those, who pays for those?
At one point, the DOT said they would, but we haven't formalized that.
Yeah.
I don't know. They
have indicated they would because it's their project to do this. So we just take over, they do all the construction, the maintenance would fall to us.
Yeah, at this point, we haven't committed any money.
Okay.
So.
Lastly, I just wanted to touch base on staffing a little bit. We had two recent requests come in for some extended leave right in the heart of winter, and they're both operator operators. Mm-hmm. And that kind of creates some staffing issues. We can't go to our operators if we've got to get out of houses. We only have 10 more operator districts. I pulled up, this is from the year 2000, our staffing list. I just wanted to show you the top sites are engineering. Bottoms, all the maintenance side of things. Since the year 2000, the engineering side, we've dropped, we had three costumes, we had a little bit more construction going on, and we kind of dropped that co-op program. They were not full-time employees. The highlighted ones are the jobs that we've dropped since 2000. On the road maintenance side, we've dropped six positions. Those are all full-time positions. Three motor grader operators, two truck drivers, and our assistant road maintenance superintendent. And that was the last one we dropped. And that really was, it wasn't dropped for many years. We were just trying to see if we could get by without it for a while because the money was really tight and there wasn't a lot of construction going on. But it stayed on the books, but it finally got taken off because we went so long. That's probably the first thing I would like to see come back on. And this person, even though they're the superintendent, could also, they could jump in a truck and get the crisis situation to help out with the staffing problem. So I'm going to be asking that as part of the budget, asking for at least one new position. Just to kind of give an idea of where we've gone the past 20 years or so. It's been a pretty big hit, and I'll tell you, there hasn't been a decrease road maintenance, they're kind of out there, so our crew's been doing a good job, which are probably time. We can probably fund at least the one position right now. We haven't had a road use tax increase since 2000 that helped our funding situation. We'll talk about this more and how we're going to get through the winter time frame.
So do you anticipate coming to the board to talk about this more in January then, with budget time, or before? Let's say we start getting snow in November and you're finding problems right away.
I'm going to talk to my superintendent a little bit. This is a fairly recent development in the leave request, so I'm planning on that. See if we can get that handled in-house. Really, we only have... We're really staffed for winter maintenance. All these crews are out every time we get a snow event, except for... We have two mechanics. We can take one mechanic and put them out in the truck. We have our inventory coordinator, the shop, and he can also go out in the truck. So we can maybe handle two, and then if we have two others that can go in the motor vehicles that know how to drive the motor vehicles. If we get anybody on that that's sick or unexpectedly, you know, that, then we get into a tougher situation. If we can handle two being gone, but so I'll have a little bit more discussion before I can give you an explanation about this, but that was my original plan to come to the transition. We feel like that needs to get all the questions in there.
Okay. I have one question as you go back to look at this further, and I'm going to look out the facilities management here and to ascertain if there would be ever any overlap of facilities management people being trained to do that, and I don't know how that goes with the union contracts, or I see Alyssa just that head go.
Funding
is different. Okay. Thank you. Never mind. It was a good idea. Let's just put it to the side, okay?
You have some staff who said you were taking extended leave. Is that leave with or without pay?
I don't know that necessarily.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, I have
a
question.
No.
Darren, I just have one question, and it's actually back on the gravel. My question is, you know, I know it's hard to anticipate whether we're going to have a huge amount of snow or rain again in this upcoming year. Are you looking at increasing the amount of gravel that you are planning on ordering for the snow and hope in the spring thaw season?
Nothing that will be in place by next spring. I do have in my budget request that some additional rock, not a lot, but I do want to point out the rock wells are not really dependent on how much rock is on the road. Those are going to come up through regardless. They do help to kind of bridge some of it at the top, but a lack of rock is not the reason behind why the frost wells happen. There's some muddy roads out there. That's rock related. Our big problem was the frost boils, and those come from, you know, 4 to 6 foot deep in the road. And, you know,
okay. Thank you.
But I will be asked for a little bit more rock, but it won't be in time for the next spring thaw.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you, Darren. And we'll look forward to hearing from you later then on what you need to get through the winter. Next, we have Joby Brogdon, and let's talk about the Story County Attorney remodel and for the court system.
Good morning.
And I also see Scott Hand here in the audience,
yep.
Court administrator.
Yep, he's here to answer any questions that we might have.
Sure.
Bring up some pictures here. Jeff provided me after, I think, his request on kind of incorporate the judicial request that we received on. 24th of last month.
And you're Jeff?
Yeah, Jeff Harris.
Oh,
yes,
I'm an architect. Sorry about that.
We haven't met before. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Hopefully you can kind of see that. I tried to provide that with all three this morning before the meeting because I got this from Jeff. Second, I've already put this on the agenda for discussion today. Kind of a general idea that Scott Anna provided me with. We've met, kind of discussed things they'd like to see incorporated. Kind of formal request in an email, and we'll discuss that day. I went ahead and have Jeff just kind of draw it up of what it could look like, incorporating all the everything that Jeff's residents had requested, and along with the judicial system. So they have a it's currently to start here. Big issue is maintaining separate private entrances into the building for the judicial system. They currently have side by side. Currently, this is the layout of the first floor of the court system of the Justice Center. Right now, they can come in this back stairs. They park along here, judicial branches. Come in this back private entrance, not public views. Access to the two courtrooms on this side, on the north side of the building. And proposed, what we have is come here. One of the requests was having an elevator that would provide private use for their staff to be required an elevator. Maintain this would be the judicial entrance into the facility. And there is on the east side of the facility is currently is this exit is an exit only for fire egress. Can't enter the building there. There is a sidewalk that currently runs the length of the building and goes back to this parking area on the north side. So we kind of move the attorney's front entry over here, since they're going to utilize this formerly a courtroom, added an exit point for the public for fire egress, and this will allow the attorneys to enter their office area privately and separately from the judicial system.
So I'd like to ask about that elevator.
Sure.
All right. Does the current layout allow court employees to stay all on the first floor, or do they have to go up sometimes to the second floor? Change the chair on the second floor.
Yeah, the district court is on the second floor and the associate court is on the first floor.
Okay. So the request to add an elevator is for convenience sake, correct? We're not asking staff that may be mobility impaired to go up to the second floor when they've never had to go up there before. That's what I'm really looking at. Is this just if we had all the money in the world, could we add an elevator, or is this really a mandatory? Because the staff are getting up using the public elevators, correct?
Or they use the stairs, correct?
Okay, but I mean, it's for mobility impaired. I empathize. I am mobility impaired.
They require an elevator. There is a public elevator that is
right.
Basically right in this area. It's not on this particular drawing. But to maintain, they would like an elevator that gives them the ability to get between floors in a private fashion.
In the secure part of the building.
So right now, there's stairs way over in the northeast.
Yeah.
Those are the stairs that are used now to get to the second floor.
Correct.
Okay.
And then there's this stairway here, and there is the public stairway, grand staircase right in the front entry to the fourth side.
Would the elevator also be accessible to county staff, the county attorney's office, to use, or would that solely be for the court system staff? This new proposal.
As it's drawn, it would be solely for the judicial. We're limited on cost reasons. The most economical place would be placed at exterior of the
sure. And we're still talking roughly then to do that part, just a ballpark, not going to hold you to it?
Yeah. Well, and I think talking to our cost estimate here, we're probably $100,000 to $120,000
just
for the elevator,
elevator
and the lobby and the enclosure to build it. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a ballpark. But.
For both.
And I think one of the bigger issues maybe was just still separation of attorneys from the court's staff and not sharing that elevator or sharing access through that northwest stairwell that's on the plan there, because if they were to use that northwest stair now, then they would have to come through part of the attorney's office to get back to the courts area. So it's some of the strength to separate those two functions and not have a cross hallway that they're sharing.
Right. My thought being, if the attorney shared the elevator, that would still be a risk. But the fact that the attorneys are walking through the court area, if you put a door through that conference room, because that conference room, if I'm understanding this, maybe not, is the conference room actually for the county attorneys?
Yeah,
right. So that would be our side. So if there were a door leading into that impressive 38-seat conference table, okay, then they could still just have to use the elevator, but not infringe upon any of the court area.
There were two
right?
doors on the elevator, for instance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Then there would have to be, that would get them on the first floor. We'd have to get a little bit more creative on the second floor.
Okay.
I'm not sure the county attorney really needs the elevator to get to the second floor. There's really no county offices on the second floor.
It's all judicial.
Yeah, but there's district courtrooms.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be entering through the back way into the courtroom. They'd be entering through front.
They'd be the public one.
So they'd be using the public elevator.
Yes.
So we wouldn't have to really worry about access to this one.
Yeah, getting a separate private for the attorneys to use on the second floor, we'd have to be very creative to keep the separation. So it would kind of defeat the purpose of having the separate entrance points.
Okay. Thank you for.
And then just I'd like to point out this right here is facilities management portion of the shop. We have a garage here, that's the overhead door. We have lengthy equipment. This poses a pinch point. We also have a shed that sits here, so getting our equipment into this overhead door to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
Could be creative with this. I mean, RMH did a nice job of, he keeping the intruders down, but ultimately you're still going to have room for an elevator and associated equipment.
And I'm going to ask, so you brought up location of like facilities. Okay. Just the, and the concrete pad for the MRAP or the MRAP, mm-hmm. that's to the west, right?
I've got an aerial of the. This is the facilities, basically this little section here. Is
okay.
This right here.
Mm-hmm. Rotated.
Yep, rotated. 90
degrees.
Yep. Yeah. And then the MRAP, you can see it, it's that guy okay. right there.
So we're not going to interrupt anything over there. I just
you
wanted
kind
to.
Of, I should be able to zoom in. So that is one of the facilities management trucks.
Okay.
Parked right there. That overhead door is here. Elevator shaft.
Right there. Okay.
So.
Got it. But that, from an economic standpoint and practical layout standpoint, is that. For the elevator right there is where it seems to work best. It just creates problems. It, I don't mean just. It creates problems for
facilities. You know, it would be, you know, to put it over here would be a lot better location. There's a couple of things we've run into. It's maintaining the attorneys in this section of the building. Mm-hmm. The court system's over here. Maintaining two separate entrance points and secure entrance points that are private to separate the two,
mm-hmm.
the two, you know, the staffs for each, you know, office, for the county attorney's office and some of the justice, you know, makes it interesting. Those are things that Jeff and I have talked about, is to make the corridor that takes up less space than the whole elevator that runs the length of here, but right about, you can kind of see the shadow from right there.
Mm-hmm.
The valve that operates the water supply and the sprinkler system in the building is really a pain in the ass.
Right. So, and as far as we know, there's no money from the court systems coming to help with this. I mean, it's like not helping to pay for some of this, correct, Scott?
No, we're not allowed to pay for building structure.
Right.
I know.
Scott and I discussed that, yeah, given. Laws are written, you're not allowed
to pay for it.
Structural
okay.
Are we adding any restrooms or just using existing restrooms?
Kind of relocating, there is. You kind of see two new restrooms here, and there is currently a restroom here and here. Which is roughly where this one is, and another one here.
Is there another place? It seems like if you didn't have those restrooms there, you could move that conference room away from the outside wall. And just run a corridor over from your existing entrance. Yeah. And that would save a whole lot of money.
I agree. There's one major issue we run into in this data closet here.
Okay.
The sprinkler shutoff valve is here.
Okay.
There's a 6-inch sprinkler riser that comes up along this wall, and the fiber optics for the building run right up along this wall. So this from about this point of this room west, we really can't alter that. And then this wall right here,
mm-hmm.
and this is the stair tower that has a high level fire rating. This structural block wall right here is probably not feasible to put a penetration through.
One thing I do know from having worked with Joby and having worked with Jessica, okay, on the couple other projects, is I've been impressed about how you guys have really dug in and analyzed things for that. So thank you. And I know this isn't my area of expertise when it comes to redesigning buildings at all. So thank you for tolerating my question.
This is, you know, essentially just a schematic of what it could mm-hmm. look like, but Jeff and I have dug into the structural of the building to make sure mm-hmm. that we don't draw something up now in the schematic part of it, when it comes to the construction side that really alters what could be done. There's things, you know, we've also thought about just once we clear this room, kind of like what you were suggesting, Linda, to move this as far north as we can, but that sprinkler shutoff valve really, really gets in the way.
Okay.
Okay. Questions? I mean, right now we're just kind of looking for a little bit of before turning the architects loose on, you know, making a final schematic and getting so that we can move forward with getting the cost estimate. Is where, kind of where we're at with this. So we're just kind of looking direction on do we everything to include, and then if the elevator, to me, one thing that we could do, and I haven't ran this one by Jeff, is when we get to the construction side of this, we could just list the elevator as an alternate add to the base bid of the project, and then we would know exactly how much it would cost to include that elevator in the construction project.
Could an alternate also be, if we didn't include the elevator, to move the entrance to be flush with the outside wall we have now, take a little bit of room, possibly off of the conference room.
It would be
have a stairwell there.
To simplify it, we just erase this here and make the vestibule in this portion.
Right.
There is one little area here. Floor elevation of this part of the building is about 20 to 24 inches higher than the parking lot grade here.
Interesting.
To get enough fall in the sewer lines to accommodate these. Because even inside, you will see that, like in these courtrooms, the judge sits higher than the rest. And a lot of that was done to gain fall for the sewer lines that run through here, basically come down here and go out and fall apart. So, yes, we would have to, worst case, there may be a ramp that might come out like this and slowly go that way.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to maintain that entrance to ADA.
But it wouldn't go so far out into what's now a driveway and cause some problems there.
Yeah. And then this was, you know, just something I had Jeff include so we could have it for today. But there's probably, realistically, if the elevator went, there would also be provisions most likely here. Maybe make this a little bit longer here for the equipment room that needs to be internal.
Yeah, we looked at actually a machine room less elevator.
Really?
We could do it now, or they just do it right in the chat. So, that would work in that configuration.
The conference.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The conference room with the 38, I was impressed. Okay, but is that kind of what the county attorney needs? I mean, she really needs that space.
When we first met with Jessica, it was, she needed provisions to meet with her entire office at one time. She has,
I think 32
on staff.
Okay.
All right. And then one of the other things that was discussed was the law library space. Sorry about that. I looked up the wrong one. Is the law library space that is at the Justice Center? That is one of the issues that building has as a whole is no meeting space, useful meeting space. So this is a way to, it's part of in set of rolling files in the current county attorney's space that we relocate. They're using about half of those rolling files. So part of the plan was that they didn't need to be in the office talking to Jessica. They could be located elsewhere as long as they were secure. So instead of having rolling files, we do more of a lateral type filing system and fit and be able to incorporate three meetings for depositions, mediation.
And that's close to the public elevators.
Yep.
That's right, by the public elevators, so they're easy to get to.
There is a public elevator right there. So you just come out in. There's a walkway that looks out over the grand staircase.
Yeah, needs always change. We know that at any time, right? Just as time goes on. But it seems to me, if my memory is correct, that there have been at least in the last 10 years or so two different kind of small remodels to accommodate the county attorney and growth in the county attorney's office. So this plan offers, I see here, the ability to finally put the county attorney in his office and all the staff in where they can settle for a while, and that will accommodate their needs. And so I like that. I know it's changed quite a bit. There's a lot of difference since when Jessica Reynolds came to us and say, hey, I know we'll just switch, you know, from a couple of people around, and the Judge Owen's offering to do that, Judge Owen. But so I like this plan from the standpoint that it looks like there's going to be some longevity in space use of it. And it sounds like we're meeting the court's needs where you've not always been satisfied with what's been set up.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate the board and Jovi coming to us and asking us what our needs are in this whole process. And I think the board's done a good job of getting the architect involved early on so that we can meet everybody's needs. So we really appreciate that.
So let me ask a question. We're going down from three courtrooms to two courtrooms on the first floor.
Correct.
And that's going to be... going to meet the needs that we see. Nobody had a problem with losing one of the first floor courtrooms.
I wouldn't say everybody was necessarily on board with that, but as long as we continue to maintain our magistrate court over in Ames, we should be fine.
Okay. And then we'd still be three courtrooms upstairs.
Correct.
Okay. Is there room to make? Can you, if we were to say, just curious about not adding another elevator because there is an elevator already to the second floor, how much might that change that 100 to 120,000? And is there room to do that and maintain the size of the conference room?
To do that within the space or to eliminate the elevator? I mean, that 120 was really just the cost of the elevator itself.
That's the elevator itself,
yes.
Not the vestibule. Okay.
Well, yes, the vestibule and the elevator. I mean, that piece that we're showing bumped out from the building.
Kind of no matter where it's located, it's going to be the cost.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you thinking whether the, like if we were to take this whole footprint here and like put it, let's say, here? That you were thinking?
Well, to me, you'd have to widen that hallway some to get a stairway in there.
Yeah.
You could get a stairway that didn't have a turn, a straight stairway up. But you'd have to widen that hallway some. You lose a little bit of the conference room, correct?
Right.
And there's no way you can recover any of that space over in the far northeast corner of the building to make up for that. See, I'm just still thinking that adding that entryway out there is a problem traffic-wise, and the elevators are a large cost when we already have an elevator going to the second floor. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, Yeah, because, I mean, simply having this entry point here without this vestibule and elevator, there is currently called a sidewalk that already runs the length of here.
Okay.
Having foot traffic, I think, is we already have a large amount of foot traffic to this point. The additional to come here wouldn't be an issue. The big thing I have is this, you know, called 15-foot by 9.5-foot jut out on the side of the building that gets in the way of what we do.
Lisa, I'm sorry, you obviously can't see the plans that we've got on the screen here, but I think they may have been in your email. And I
yes, they were, yep.
Do you have any questions?
No, I guess my one comment goes back to the elevator that's been going on. I know that does present an additional cost. I just try to think of, and maybe, Joby, this was kind of your thought as well, thinking kind of future-wise, and that may have been the county attorney's office as well, is, you know, it may not be necessarily an accessibility issue right now, but it could future-wise be an accessibility issue for a staff person. And just wondering or just commenting that, you know, while it is, does present an increased cost and some convenience, it may be to our better interest to include that, because I'm going to assume that trying to retrofit something later is going to increase costs.
I kind of agree. I do know with speaking with Scott that they do kind of have a need for it at this point. They have people on their staff right now that would benefit from this, that do come to this location. One of them is a judge and another one is a staff member that do frequent this facility that would utilize that if it was there, because it is a private entry point. And I agree that if we're going to look into doing an elevator, if we can feasibly make it to where it could potentially benefit both the judicial and county attorney staff, I would like to look into that.
What would it take? Could it even go in to that where the existing stairwell is? There seems to be a lot of room there.
There is, and it is things that I have kicked around, because there is, essentially, you had to see the shade line. On the second level, there is a walkway that we have, that we store, facilities management currently stores some custodial supplies that would give us a landing point on the second level. If the elevator was here, then we'd have to get some sort of entry that comes to this area here or something along this wall. What we run into is on the second level, how to make that usable for county staff. Is it you would end up coming out right in court area is the fact.
Scott, I need to ask you a question.
Sure.
In all the other 21 courthouses in the second district, do you have that total separation between the county attorney's space and the judge's space so that they would never be walking down the same corridor?
In our more current buildings, we do. Obviously, courthouses built 100 years ago don't have that.
Yeah.
This building was designed with that separation 20 years ago. We'd like to maintain that separation. Any new facility has that separation.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell County is our newest courthouse, for instance. We have total separation between court staff and the county attorney is big thing. There's just a perception thing there.
Sure.
That, you know, we don't want to appear to be cozy with the county attorney. The judicial branch is the neutral party here.
Mm-hmm.
So to maintain that separation is important to the court.
It seems though, and what I'm thinking is if we're going to put in another elevator, it seems like it would be makes sense for us to try to figure out a way that the county attorney staff could use it as well.
Sure.
That's what I'm trying. See, that's why
absolutely.
I'm asking that. If we put it over there, if it couldn't be a shared access elevator.
I'm also thinking, as like I said earlier, mobility challenged myself. Okay, so I use elevators a lot. And there's the issue of safety for both the court staff and for the county attorney staff. That was one of the discussions, even when it was pointed out that the county attorneys don't have access to a private bathroom. They're sharing bathrooms with public, including it could be defendants or family members of defendants, and that's a risky situation. So I would like to be able to make that elevator usable for county staff also, so they're not having to ride the, someone would have to ride the public elevator quite so much.
So.
Where that might make sense. Because, yeah, then you really got that it's really second floor where it becomes bigger issue.
Yeah.
Getting attorney staff through the second floor to this elevator and then down to their office space, that'll be the challenge. But we can look at that.
And unfortunately, they'll just have to hopefully not ride at the same time much, Scott, or not talk to each other while they're in the elevator, right?
We can key them.
Did you have another question?
Yes, well,
no, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just to kind of see where this right here would be, the elevator was on the outside. This is where it would come up. Here's our same stair tower. Here's that landing I discussed. As you can see, you come right in here. This is the big IT communications closet. Here's the residing judge's chambers. Along this wall is jury rooms and visiting judges' chambers. So this is getting from this point on the second level to essentially this point here in that main public hallway is where it gets interesting on the second level.
So is this stairwell here?
Yes.
Potential?
Yes, to solve our second floor issues for county staff, but it kind of makes it interesting potentially for.
But that stairwell could almost become private for county staff because it really enters into the county attorney's office on first floor then after this, if the remodeling were completed.
So we could potentially do something. This is the judicial hallway, private hallway. You do something maybe in here, but we'd have to look at the building sits at an angle on the property, and the property runs at an angle. It's off the parkway, it's kind of curvy. Meaning, I know currently that's why the building is shaped the way it is along here. Setback requirements off the property line, but it's something to look into.
Well, if there's a way of putting in one elevator that, and maybe, you know, not two, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yeah.
There's already one elevator in the wing of the building, so I'm pushing it in my mind, thinking about a second one.
Well, something else to look at is once the elevator's there, we got to maintain inspection on an annual basis.
Yeah.
That's roughly about $3,800 a year per elevator. So.
I'm okay with that from safety and mobility.
Yeah, I agree. You know, but if we're going to do it, I think we spend a little more time and see what we can find in that location.
So, if this is discussion and direction, if I might attempt to summarize the direction we have, is it seems to meet most of the needs, but we're concerned about the elevator being the vestibule, that bump out there. And we would like the elevator to be somewhere where it could be reasonably convenient for both county attorney staff and judicial staff to use. If we, and one elevator.
One new elevator.
Is there anything else?
Not for me.
Nope, I think you summed it up correctly, Linda.
Okay. Okay, well, this is, I'm glad we went the direction of getting more input here and having an architect look at it because, you know, we want to do it right. We want to make sure we're meeting the needs into the future, and that's why I'm glad that Ms. Tam is able to be here today as well and to participate in this. So if we would see what we can work out. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Come back and hopefully at that point we can have the, now we know which direction to go with the elevator. We'll cost estimate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think the direction was also not being that crazy about the bump out.
Yes.
Yeah. Eliminate that.
A little bit more options.
Okay.
On site.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Next, we have, it looks like next we have Leanne Hardert for discussion and direction regarding capital improvement plan process and forms. Leanne?
You know, Paula Lee is like,
good morning.
Are those new or?
No, those are
okay. That's all existing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same with the last question on that page. And the intention is to maintain them as a long page from that. Just when I PDF it, a little bit of argument. Continuation on page, the second page of Form 1, schedule. We've always asked them to provide a schedule and attach it. Some blank, fit in the blank space along with the project priorities and the project budget. And there is some additional, you'll see it in the box, language for the project budget, more specificity. When you're suggesting, you're asking that they identify the source cost and date in the line below of the whatever cost estimates that they've indicated they have. And then also incorporate or acknowledge what may be, again, maybe estimates, but what may be needed for architectural engineering costs and the contingency fees, pardon me, using a 10% amount. And then below that, there's an opportunity for them to identify the funding sources available for the project, whether it's part of the budget request. special funds, such as the Friends of Animal Shelter Fund, those other ancillary funds that improvements need to complete, that project can be used to complete improvements. Grant funds, and then if it is proposed use tax increment financing, the date on which that discussion occurs is forward. And I do want to call it the tip for tax increment financing for the thought of expanding that a little bit right there. The remainder is the same as from here to here. The only difference is there's a larger crop if you only bottom and
So that is 4-1. Can I ask first the basis of the project budget? I'm not familiar with the form. I did not look at the current form. Are we asking for all of that right now, or is there an additional there?
What we're asking for right now is the total estimated cost one and the base.
Okay.
And then it goes down to for budget impact cost, budget impact cost, and savings for all current as well.
Didn't we ask something about funds available, but not split it out so specifically? So.
Identify the funds
available. Yeah, it just said identify the funds available. I suggested these changes. First of all, we've experienced that maybe some people are including an architect's fee in the project costs or their contingency fees. We've discovered in discussions over the last few months that not everyone's doing it in a uniform fashion. And that will help us also then know how have they put these numbers together. We've discovered on some projects that the numbers are out of date. They're old numbers. Then the other one is in selecting the funding options to make it clearer when they just say general funds. Well, some people are indicating it's general funds, but it's been allocated through their budget, their department budget, in the funding request, where other people are thinking that they want to come back to the board and get additional general funds. And ditto on a lot of people are listing tax incremental financing, but the board's never discussed that at all. So this at least gives a heads up to the board that this is not something that's been on the radar in a board discussion, not a vote, but just has it ever even come up before the board before as a possible use of TIF funds. I think there are some assumptions out there sometimes that everybody will put TIF in there. We can use that money. So that's why I made those suggestions.
Okay. And I guess what I was more concerned about was whether we would be in somehow, and probably not, but encouraging departments to go out and spend a lot of money on an architect to do cost estimates on things we might not be interested in doing.
Right.
So I know sometimes I see to be determined or we really don't know, and I was hoping that all this wasn't to try to get away from that, because I think sometimes people just don't know, and before they know if the supervisors would even be interested in going this direction, let's not be spending money getting estimates of something we wouldn't be interested in. That was my concern.
Got it.
And we definitely have plenty of room that I can add. Even the architectural and after cost for architectural engineering in the CD, these can be estimates.
Yeah.
Well, I see ballpark and guesstimate there.
Yeah. And then we do indicate also their source cost date. Just say, hey, it cost Hamilton County this much money in 2018 to build this cabin.
Okay, on Form 2, really a much more simple modification is proposed, adding the funding options available for the project to Form 2. And then I did just for those preparing for today, notice on the reverse of Form 2, where it asks whether the project is included in a fiscal year 19 adopted or prior year
should
budget.
Be 20.
Yeah. Well, that one should be
19.
19 underneath the year 2018.
Okay.
We're always asking, and it's basically asking the continuation and the budget plan out.
Okay, so you'll make the changes then.
I will make the changes.
Okay.
So those are the forms. The process time frame put in a couple of different tasks for the board to consider. So in the past years, the process has been pretty simple that we followed. There's been a committee of staff, or a review committee set up, included Lisa Markley, Jovi, Barb Steinbeck, Mike Cox, Darren Moon, and Deb Shildrock, and myself. And then we've always had a board member on it as a ad hoc to give us some feedback, really just kind of sounding board on some of the issues. And the past, since we've been doing that, Rick Sanders was the guy who was serving on that review. So how we've done it, last year was the first year we had the CSB request come in concurrently with the budget, right?
Yep.
With the budget request. I think that worked very well because we were able to smash up whether or not they were in the budget request or not, and they weren't following the CSB request form. And then at the same time as Lisa's been preparing the budget book, I'm working on the draft CSB to bring to the board for the first work session of the year. So that's kind of how we found the committee, sat down and gone through the forms, and then that plan has been brought to the board of supervisors. So what some options for the board to consider, obviously today is I would take the spring and forms back in the time frame for you to approve next week, and then distribute the forms at that point, rather than waiting until we have staffing or the budget. Budget directions are sent out. I would still have them do the same kind of the budget, proposed budget are required to do. And then, which I don't know if Lisa has a date yet, but I would assume that's that first Friday in December, maybe the second. And I can work with her on that. But following that, the next week, staff would meet and discuss projects like it always happens. And then, before we do that, staff, me and me will be able to meet the department if they need more direction on how the forms work. Last year, I set up some time frames. I had a couple of people take advantage of it, but I looked at my calendar, and that 4-6, I think, for that time to make sure I'm available if needed. And then we go to December 9th, that review committee would meet once, and then we would come back to the board for the work session. We've never done that. But that's an opportunity for the board to for discussion for you today and some direction. For you to have an opportunity to review what we're seeing before I'm taking the time to actually put the plan in place or draft the plan on in place or put the details in place. See if there's more areas that we've not identified that we need more information. And then the following week or later that week, in fact, the committee would meet again. And then I would go forward and do the draft CIP frame back for the official board session in January. So it's a new step that I'm putting out there for the board to consider. Maybe we've done it the other way for years. But since there is a relatively new board, it's an opportunity for you to look at the process because this was put in place prior to the two of you.
Yeah, and I never had a say in the 2 years previous to that I sat on the board. The discussions were held, never knew Sanders was going, until after the fact that Rick Sanders had appointed himself to go talk to the committee without any input from the other two supervisors. And I feel that this work session with the board on December 17th is an opportunity for the board to all three members be able to give some initial direction, feedback. This is not a vote in any way. This is just so that all three voices are heard when the staff is still working on what they have. Questions are brought forward. I'm not comfortable with only one supervisor sitting in. I think it should either be the staff by itself or all three supervisors.
It would be just where I am right now on the agenda. Other reports, discussion direction, or just discussion as a both project. If you want to know all the blanks for 2020,
I think it's, I would agree, I think it's a good idea. I have trouble with December 17th, so I won't be here.
Okay.
I'm going to be gone that week and the following week. So, and I hate to push it further ahead, but I'm wondering if we could... You could shave a few days off and get it not the Friday before, maybe, I don't know, the Thursday before the 12th, if that were a day perhaps that would work.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be at the same time as the board meeting.
Yeah.
Special work session. I can go to calendars and definitely want to coordinate with Lisa to make sure that
the dates
are
okay.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time doing that if that was not an idea.
And Supervisor Heddens, did you have any thoughts about this?
No, I don't read at the moment.
So with that, what I have before you today, you can come back next week with any additional changes noted, the forms, if you have any, for official action, and then distribute them next week. Some instructions for elected officials in the front head, along with the time frame for formal adoption.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Leanne, for your work on that.
Okay. Good work. Thank you. So, and upcoming agenda items, does anybody have some to discuss?
Not yet for me. I'm still waiting to hear back from Ethan, so I may in the future, but have not heard back from him yet.
Okay. Laura?
Just a thought. We're now about a month out from when our new director of external operations mm-hmm. come. And at the time that we had discussed and looked at some changes to the actual job description, I brought up if there were other things that maybe we wanted to put together. And I don't know if expectations is the right, but maybe some goals or whatever. And when would that be a time? Did we want to talk about it before she arrives, or would we like to give her a few weeks to kind of settle in, meet everybody, get her own feel, and then have a discussion a couple a little bit as when it comes to maybe information flow, on the future goals that either any of us would be interested in setting as a board. So I'm not sure whether that would be a good agenda item or workshop, or whether that would be considered ministerial. So I know I'm starting to kind of accumulate my list here of thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we went through the job description very thoroughly mm-hmm. and made some changes at that time. So I can't think that we'd want to look at the
job
description again. Okay, well, that's where you started out. That's why I was
going
to say that. Mm-hmm. In terms of goals, I think that... we've hired a very qualified person, but she's going to be new to Story County. And I would just as soon have her working with Alyssa primarily and secondarily, I think, with the supervisors on the boards and commissions we're on to get her feet on the ground and learn about Story County before we inundate her with a bunch of goals. That might be a ministerial mm-hmm. discussion to start out with. That might be the way to do it. It's just have some conversation among ourselves and then see where it goes.
Okay. I'm comfortable either way. As I said, the reason I brought up when we done the job description, I'd put a couple of items in the job description we decided was more along the line of
not really job description items, but more about expectations, like communication flow up and down, from department heads through their whatever. So, yeah, ministerial is fine with me.
Okay,
so,
great. Anything else?
Not that I'm seeing right off the bat for the next week or so.
Okay. And I have no agenda items, special ones for next week either. Public forum number two is next on the agenda, and that's for any items, the public to comment on any items not on the agenda. Because of open meetings law, we could not take action, but if anybody have anything they would like to comment on. Seeing nobody moving to the microphone, I'll close public comment session two. And liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisor. Supervisor Heddens, I'd start with you if you had anything.
No, I do have the DCAP meeting on Friday. Depending on my family situation, I will probably just partake on that via phone. That's what I have at this particular time for this week. I actually had a relatively light week this week.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Laura?
Okay. So Two Rivers coordinating group met. This is now kind of the housing group. Since there's no longer the Story County Affordable Housing Coalition. And there, in November, there will be asking us to have a Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week proclamation. I'll send that information to Kathy Johnson in Community Services here. They're normally who brings it forward. They are starting to prepare for the point in time homeless count at the end of January. There's a July count done statewide, and it shows 126 homeless people statewide, and that's because it's a very, very, I know I see people scowling there in the audience. It's a very narrow definition of homelessness, and it's finding someone who asking them, do you know where you're sleeping tonight? And where did you sleep last night? And so you have to find them, first of all. So January is also a point in time. They're going to try and improve how they're reaching out to people. Related a little bit to that definition is that I did let people know at that meeting that we were still working on the RFP for the housing needs assessment, and if they felt there should be any information that should go into the RFP, that should be produced probably by mid or late October, so that if we want to consider if they want to collect something beyond what had been analyzed last time. Last time there was nothing in there about transitional housing, people doubling up, et cetera. And maybe we don't want to take that on in the housing needs assessment, but that's where the big gap seems to be on homelessness. Also, we discussed a conversation that I had with a landlord of at least several hundred properties in Story County about some of the reasons that landlords are hesitant to take on people with low incomes or who have had past where either there was gaps in employment or maybe domestic abuse, law enforcement involvement, et cetera. And I passed on that information to the group. We had a discussion about it, and the group, a subcommittee that is working on trying to get more contact and more landlords to participate and work cooperatively, want to take more look at what that conversation was. And it basically boiled down to that some landlords are just not willing to take on those subgroups that tend to deal more with homelessness or lack of stability in housing, because it's not just the deposit and first month's rent. It is often that there's several months in arrears at some point, and also that there's damage to the facilities that can add up to thousands or tens of thousands of dollars, and there's no one to go back to on that. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out in the future from the group about a damage mitigation. There are some areas of the country where some agencies or groups have worked to create damage mitigation tools.
So that's just, that's it. Then Wednesday, there's a transportation collaboration. I pass the agenda on to Supervisor Merkin in case she'd like to attend also. It's pretty much going to be a wonky type of let's talk about what will our goals be in the future. Lisa, if you're back also and you'd like to attend, I can send that to you. Thursday, of course, we have animal control recognition. Friday, their AEDC executive committee meeting. I have not received an agenda on that. We normally go over what the finances are for the AEDC and its affiliates, talk a little bit about just general information exchanged about what is far out in the future and normally not being able at that point to be disseminated even to the board members. And then there, we've got the Prairie View Industrial Area Certification Ceremony at the Memorial Union on Friday, and I pass that invite along to both of you. Okay. And then Monday, there's the Story County Opioid Task Force. And Linda, I'm wondering if you would like to attend that instead with your appointment to the county attorney's award for that Justice Department grant
for
drug diversion.
When is it?
It is 9 o'clock on Monday morning.
Sure.
Okay, and I don't have that agenda either, but I can pass that on to you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been attending, but and I know Supervisor Hedden's attended when she was with Dummy.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that seems like something that would probably be more appropriate. We've also got various staff who attend. Tyler Lennon is pretty much our usual contact there. Then the Story County Juvenile Justice Committee, I've been attending that for, I don't know, 10 to 12 years. I don't sit on any committees right now that would be appropriate. Supervisor Merkin sitting on the Second Judicial Committee and Supervisor Hedden sitting on the Center for Juvenile Corrections, but I would like to go to this one, and we'll just all sit away from each other so we don't chat, all right? So even though we're all there, there's no quorum discussion there, because I believe that the agenda is an overall kind of an update of the juvenile system here in the county, so I'd like to just chair that one. So that's my week, okay?
Okay, thank you. And in addition to some of the meetings that Supervisor Olson has talked about, we have a StoryCom meeting on Thursday afternoon, getting closer on tower sites, getting the budget tightened up, those kind of things, looking towards StoryCom being operational and next July 1. So a transition system before that. And let's see then. Saturday, I'm hoping to attend something called Better Angels, which Inclusive Ames is putting on, which is talking about a workshop talking about talking across the political divide, being able to talk to people, listen, and more importantly, listen to people of different political opinions. And I think that'll be very useful. Monday, then I now have the Opioid Task Force, and thank you. And also we're going to Story County Juvenile Justice Task Force and have a Conservation Board meeting then in the evening. And Tuesday will be after our next meeting, but we have a Historical Alliance here in the afternoon. So lots of meetings coming up. Okay.
Oh, then I do have one question. I wasn't sure whether you were going to mention it or not, but with the boards and commission extension on the applications, are we going to set a date, or are we going to say for those where the applications, we don't have applications yet, that until filled?
We're going to continue having them posted until filled.
I would recommend until filled instead of a hard date, because you're just going to have to continue.
Okay. So right now then, Alyssa, so then for those that applications that made the date, is the plan, then we'll just go ahead and appoint out of those people. I know in one situation we have more than enough applicants.
The process would be to refer all those applicants to the board. Whether you decide to appoint any from that pool would be up to the board. But we do have a couple, like the Planning and Zoning Commission, we have had no applications, so we will need to keep those postings up to let the public know we're still are still looking for individuals to fill those vacancies. So I intend to just kind of reword some things and with Leanne's help get that posting changed on the website.
Thank you.
But we can go ahead and interview where we do have applications.
Absolutely. You can.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was it. That's it? Okay. Then if there's nothing else, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Lisa.